This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Funding for minority founders, the gender pay gap, internal mobility, AI, and FOBO, the fear of being obsolete. What's going on, people? Ryan Leary here from WorkDefined, and you are listening to The Barf, a look back on the week that was so you can be prepared for the week that is. We cover this and more right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of The Barf. It is Sunday the 3rd. I got my dates right? I think so. I'm Ryan Leary. He is William Tincup. And it's another episode of The Barf where we talk about breaking news, acquisitions, research, and funding. Mr. William, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I am doing well. Thank you, brother.
Daylight savings time?
Yeah.
It's brighter.
Always confuses me. Always, it's like time zones. It's just, it's an Achilles heel for me.
No, good. So it's been a pretty good week, I think.
We got some cool stories to pitch to each other.
Why don't you kick us off? What do you got first?
All right. So something that came across for me is McDonald's employee had to pump breast milk in stockroom corner, the lawsuit alleges. So I got that from Ohio Employer Law blog. And so basically, there's the Pump Act, and it was revised in January 23 that you have to provide a place other than a bathroom that's shielded from view and free of intrusions, so that women can, they can pump or breastfeed or whatever if the baby's there. So to me, it's basic. And I think everyone should, go to the Department of Labor website and search for the Pump Act. And it's got a longer title, but that's basically what they call it, is the Pump Act. And it's basic, but it's like, okay, they've had plenty of time. Even if it was revised in January 23, they've had plenty of time to then create a safe space for women to do this. Like, this is just like breathable air. Like, it's just basic.
They've done enough with their restaurants where they've renovated, at least by us. They've renovated them. They've got the robot ordering kiosks and all that stuff.
This seems pretty basic.
Yeah, which, by the way, I don't go to McDonald's often. When we bring the kids there and you go in, you can no longer talk to a human, at least by us. I don't know how it is by you. You've got to either order on your app or order on a machine. You cannot talk to a human, and they look at you when you walk in, and that's all they do. They look at you, and they keep walking by. Nobody helps you.
Am I going to get to talk to – can I – is it something I said?
You think they'd be building a room.
Yeah.
Well, no. They're just ignoring you.
Being racially profiled. What's going on here? I have money.
It's green. It's green.
Clearly, I'm overweight. Yeah. Please, sir.
They're trying to help us by not feeding us.
That's fair enough. You know, we have salads, right? Thank you. Great.
Oh, man.
What do you got?
I've got one here. I'm going back down to the land down under. I did this, I think, last week. I pulled an Australian story out. I forget what it was.
Crikey.
What was it?
Crikey. You remember the guy?
You're catching me off. All right. So, Australian gender pay gap report came out a couple weeks back, I think. But it was released by the government, right? So the government released for the first time data on companies or with firms that have more than 100 employees, the pay gaps that exist between men and women at varying levels. And so their thought here was obviously call them out.
Right.
Not in a malicious way, but call them out and expose the fact that this is a real problem in Australia. And so I'm going to let me just pull these numbers up because I'm going to misquote it here. So this was legislation that was passed back in 2023, where each year they're going to release any firm with more than 100. They're going to release this report. So the median the gap was 19% in favor of men. The base pay gap, 14.5%, and the average total of pay was 21.7. Favored to men, of course.
Right. Yeah.
Banking was the biggest offender.
Shocking.
The Commonwealth Bank of Australia, with 50,000 plus employees, the pay gap. Take a guess. What number we have?
I'm going to go 30%.
You're wrong.
Where are we at?
29.9. So
when close. I said 30%, you're like, close. Oh, that's did you read the article? That's not fair.
No, I thought for a second, did you read? No. So that's pretty high.
That's extremely high.
I don't know what the number is here in the States, but I felt that was really high. They've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, the thing is, for me, again, we all know that the gender equity pay gap exists.
Yep.
Like this, we can't act like it does. It's not there. It's there. It's real, and it shouldn't be there. So, like, while I like that they're, reporting on it and doing it in a public way, etc. I like all of that. I think why do we start at 100? I mean, if you have two employees, I think at one point you've got to reconcile those things, and it should be at the founder level, at the base, at when you build a company, equity should be at the core of what you do.
Right.
And that should be part of your, not just your value system, but it's just, that's what good businesses do. You make equitable decisions.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they're doing it.
Yeah. It's nice that they're doing it. I did look, there's a whole bunch of content and articles around what they should be doing from the pundits out there, but there's nothing, there's nothing that says what these companies are actually doing.
No, you have to make it a zero tolerance policy. The board, if we're being really honest with each other, the board has to say, okay, no mas. And that's it. That's just like, we're going to reconcile and bring everyone up to a certain place, which means that you're going to spend a lot of money to get to people to pay for past atrocities.
Right.
Get everyone at the same level. And then when you hire in, which means that you have to have a really, really, really good compensation team and great compensation software, ironically. Right. So, and it's an investment. It's an investment in the future. And I think the companies that do that, they do it in a very public way.
Yeah.
They're transparent about it. They're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Quarter over quarter, here's what we're going to do. We're going to move from 20% to 15%. 15%, 10, 5, 0. And by any year, we'll have invested $200 million or whatever the bid is, and we'll get there. And, by the way, on the recruiting side, we'll fix that by no more.
Immediately.
Right. So
now does that, I know we've had these discussions before, but does bringing in new talent and immediately bringing them up to the same pay scale, does that create an inequity with the current women that are in the organization?
Well, again, it's your skills, and now you get into kind of your competency model and your skills model and your experience model, et cetera. Like everything, then when you talk to comp people, there's a grid. How long do you have these skills, and how long have you been doing it? And then they've got kind of a range. What we're trying to get is people that are equal. So a man and a woman both have been doing, let's say, Java programming for 10 years. They both graduated from so-and-so schools. So they look on paper and they are very much equals. they should be getting the exact same pay.
Absolutely.
So if somebody comes in with 8 years of experience, yeah, they should make a little bit less. But because but then it's justifiable because they're not the same.
Right. Right.
Okay. So but the thing is having a zero tolerance policy around equal.
Agreed.
Start there, and then you just build a. So when you bring in new talent, even if they want more, you can make that decision. If they want more, then you move mm-hmm. everyone else up. So if you want to hire that talent, like say you're going to go hire an AI developer, you've got three AI developers that you bought, you know, 5 years ago,
right?
And they're making, let's say, 200K. This gal comes in and she wants. I'm not going to take anything less than 250. Okay. Then that's $150,000 that you need to bring the other people up.
You need to figure it out.
Yeah, you just bring them. You just again same. So these you have to be apples to apples comparisons. All right. I want you to feel sorry. This is a related story for the Blackstone CEO Schwartzman. He received 896.7 million. In pay and dividends in 2023. So right under a billion, right? Okay. And that was a 29% decline from his record take in 2022.
Well, so then
he made 1.2-ish. Let's just round it up for those that are non-math majors. He made 1.2 in pay. Now, again, that's pay and dividends and all that kind of stuff, right? And this is on Reuters, so if you want to dig into the story, you can. So, like, as we're talking, there's a lot of chatter around equal pay. You can throw a rock and find an article on equal pay. Not as much chatter needs to be around executive compensation. And so this is one of these deals. How do we pay for it? Okay, we reconcile executive comp to then make sure everyone else. It sounds a little socialist. It's not. It's just saying, did that person really add $1 billion worth of value in that year? Really? I mean, that's questionable if they did. If they did, fantastic. All right, cool, whatever. But the way to pay for equity, the gaps in equity, is to look at executive, in my opinion, is to look at executive comp. So, yeah, feel sorry for him because he made less money in 23.
Yeah, well, it's a shame. That's a shame. The shame. Well, that's, I guess, right? Well, all right. I've got one here. This is nothing of super importance to you or anybody else that's listening, except Mary's mother or Mary's husband or Mary herself, Mary E. Sweeney. She moved to Trident Health as VP of HR, I think it is.
Right.
The only reason I bring it up is because she was with a local university that it's only 23 minutes away, and it's a big deal out here. She's making a move and moving over and going back into healthcare. That's it.
That's very cool.
Nothing crazy about that story.
So from academia and back into the private
healthcare sector? To academia, back to healthcare.
Wow. Actually, yeah. I'd like to dig into that at some point because that's actually interesting. Most people, once they leave academia, they're gone. And, you know, like, why mm-hmm. go back?
Oh, maybe we'll get her on the show.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to find, dig into why she was made that
23
decision.
Minutes away. We should be able to figure this out.
100%. All right. So here's one I got for you. Sam Kriegman, a faculty member at Northwestern's McCormick School of Engineering. He's built AI that can build a robot in 26 seconds. So it can iterate, and he's got AI that can build a robot in 26 seconds. And so,
tell me more.
Dude, when I read that, so that's on ZDNet.com, so you can look at the story there. Type in his name or just 26 seconds, you can probably find it. What it got me to think about is we're not prepared for how fast AI will iterate. And, you know, just the fact that he and his team, I'm sure, has built AI to where it can build a robot that fast and iterate that fast. Like it used to take in the design phase, it would take months. And then the prototyping and all of that shit, it would take, to build a robot, it was, you would think in years and months.
So define this, robot here. What are we talking about? I forget the name of the company. My memory is shot.
Yeah,
today.
it's not humanoid stuff. No, these are micro robots.
Okay.
Yeah, but the thing is it's making you think about, okay, that's a professor in academia, and he's basically got the time down to 26 seconds. Okay, cool. Now for us, AI will initially, that iteration, the speed of iteration, like when we talk about Moore's law from back in the 80s and 90s, about how the computing power and how it kind of manifests, this is Moore's law on steroids, because what we see in AI and how fast it'll iterate is daunting at first, but once we kind of consume that this is going to happen faster than we ever thought of, then we should become okay with it. Like, okay, it's 26 seconds, but that when next time he's going to put out a report, it's going to be 20 seconds. And the next time he puts out another report,
right,
it's going to be 15 seconds. So instantaneous is probably, or that, or it just intuitively builds robots. There's no time. You just think something and it builds robots for you and builds AI for you. So it's just, I brought this story to our attention to just basically think, okay, all right, so if we weren't already thinking about this, we should probably think about this,
right?
And think about, okay, so it's going to happen fast. It's going to happen a lot faster than we're comfortable with. A lot of ambiguity. A lot of the ground moving below our feet. And good topic to think about.
Love it. All right, you ready for some research?
Yeah, bring it.
I've got some fresh off the presses from LinkedIn. All right, internal mobility. I'm not sure if you saw this. But they had some content out and reporting out on internal mobility is booming, is kind of how they labeled it. But I want to get your take on this, because I know you've studied this space a lot and you have a lot of thoughts here. So the transitions seem to be limited to mid-level employees and above. So lower level employees have been left out. The higher level staff is more than twice as likely to make an internal move within the organization. And so it's a long report, but that's kind of what I picked out when I went through it. A couple of thoughts here, and I want to get your take on this. I feel like this is bad. Right, I feel like this ties into another story that I read after this that I want to bring in, which I'll get to it at some point today. But I feel like this is bad. I feel like this is widening that equity gap within the organizations, and certainly not building an inclusive culture. We talked about an inclusive culture last week. We can dig deeper on that here if we want, but it's definitely not equitable. And I know you've got a lot of solid thoughts there, so have at it.
Yeah, I think the thing is nobody does internal mobility well. So it's one of those things. It's probably something that is more or less a holy grail of HR, and in the sense of you hire somebody, and at the entry level, and you continue to move them. Based on success, of course, and performance and cultural alignment and all the other things that you'd like to think of, all those holes that open up. So if we say that mid managers are moving laterally or they're moving, then there's a hole. Now, what could be happening based on the economy and based on what people think about the economy is those holes don't open. So they're moving and doing a new gig within the company, but there isn't a place for the entry-level folks to move into. Well, let's put that aside, but let's say there is a hole. What should be happening is the internal recruiting should be looking first at the people they already have on staff, bringing them, pulling them forward, getting them the training, et cetera, to them. And that way, you're just vertically integrated. You just bring people in the front door, and they just kind of move and march all around the organization. And but again, no one's doing it well. So when people listen to this,
yeah,
it's not like you can point to a company and go, "Yep, we need to do it like they do it and better." No one does it well. But I think more kind of information on those moves that are made internally could be to new places. Well, they're to new places, but they might not be creating openings.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. And at face value, someone moved, there should be an opening. That doesn't always happen. It should. It doesn't always happen. Why don't we take a page out of the minor leagues, right? Out of the farming system. Like, right.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is what they do each and every day, right? Like they're shuffling players around. But when you get into a corporate structure, you're there.
Yeah.
Like you're in your role. You're like you're told it's told to you or it's taught to you. You're going to be there for 2 years before you can move up.
Well, it's worse than that because people, once they have a person in that spot, they don't want them to move. That's
if they're a top
managers.
Performer, they don't want to move. Yeah.
Right. No. Yeah. If you're a bad manager,
right.
You don't want to have to replace that talent.
Right.
So
right.
You stymie their growth.
Yes.
And again, that's a tell for a bad manager. A good manager, if not a great manager, is figuring out how to get that person promoted to AA, AAA, and into the majors.
Right. Right.
And so yeah, I full heartedly agree with you. In terms of how we should view talent, is bring them in raw.
Yeah.
And then, you know, get them out of high school, get them out of whatever, mm-hmm. get them out of college, take them out of the draft, and get them in raw, send them straight to single-A ball, let them play their way through it, and, you know, get the coaching and stuff and just kind of work their way through it. Same with employees. Like, just bring them in. Let's get them in the front door.
Bring them in
and let them bounce off the walls a little bit. Some of them are going to take a little bit harder, longer path to get to the place. There's some people that are in the minor leagues their entire career.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. unless you're the minor leaguer that's in there for 15 years.
Dude, seriously, think about it. That's a successful career. You got
absolutely
to play baseball for 15 years of your life.
Yeah.
And get paid to play a game. Yeah. Dude,
100%.
That's winning.
Yeah, 100%. So I've got a story that I'll bring it up later, but it ties into this just because of the way we're talking about it. But this also ties into, and we haven't released it yet, a conversation. Well, so if you're hearing this later on in life, we've already released the conversation. But if you're hearing it tomorrow, we have not released the conversation about workplace happiness. We just had this conversation yesterday and about bad managers and how to make managers better. And I think this is why the story caught my attention. We'll link it down in the notes when it's published so that you can all go back and see it and watch it. So
I think
it's a good conversation.
With the CEO founder of Best Practices Institute.
Well, you're right.
Workology, their product. We also talked a lot about happiness with WISC. Founders of WISC. So talk about it in a lot of different ways. All right, let me throw one past you. Atlanta, Boston, Bay Area lead way in dramatic funding decline to back startup founders.
Okay.
That's via Crunchbase. And it's a two-part series. Please go read it because it will absolutely break your heart. Because they're looking at all the regression of where we were, how we were making where we were making strides. And in this particular series, they tackle African-American founders, co-founders. But you could probably apply a lot of the same logic to women founders. Mm-hmm. And so it looks, you know, to me, when I looked at it, I'm like, okay, reading it, this is obviously heartbreaking. funding's hard right now. Like, I get it. Yeah. Funding, it's just super, super hard. But the hope is that we don't regress into a state where we're only funding white male founders, which is where we've been historically throughout Silicon Valley. That's just kind of been the bit. You know, you're a white male. You're obviously going to run a successful company. So it's heartbreaking, but it's better for us to talk about it. It's better for this series. The two-part series is again something to read and consume, and then have an understanding so that we can be better.
I've got an acquisition to talk about.
Oh, do tell.
I will tell. So, all right. So every year we talk about consolidation. The market's going to consolidate. I think we're actually, if you've seen it before, but we're seeing this here now. It's happening. And there's been a couple of acquisitions. I know you have some you want to talk about. The one that caught my eye was Deel.
Right.
So Deel acquired Zavvi. I think why this is kind of catching my attention here, which is the same I think for most people. There's a lot of large players in the industry. They're snapping up smaller, more flexible, agile startups that can innovate quickly. And I want to stress innovate quickly, because obviously the larger you get, you can't do a lot of things quickly. Some companies can. Not a lot of companies do. But startups do, and they have that culture. And so when you come across a company like Zavvi or some of the others that are out there that are really making some dents in the market, they're not going to last long on their own, right? They're going to get eaten up. And in this case, they did. Deel picked them up. But so for those that don't know, Deel is an HR business, $12 billion. Zavvi's Munich-based. It's a people development firm. And so essentially, they work on tools that help to customize career progression.
Right.
So I think this is important to understand. I'm curious to see what they do. And I think this is important because as we move forward in 24, I don't think hiring is right at the moment. I think with the pandemic, things happen. We boomed up. We made a whole lot of hires. We're kind of in that right sizing space right now. This deal with Zavvi allows Deel, no pun intended there, but Zavvi allows this deal with Zavvi allows them to now focus with their clients on career progression internally tied to what we were just talking about.
Right.
The entry level, the lower level employees of the company that are solid performers that need to step up in the company that don't have the opportunity. This now allows them to do that, or at least work toward that process.
So I like the take on the buying agile players, but what they also got in Zavvi is it's AI based. So I think we're going to see a lot of those types of plays, those acquisitions. It's people that started, like we used to talk about mobile first.
Remember that?
How something was mobile first. The plays that come to life now that are AI first, they don't start with traditional software model. Right. They start with an AI based model. Then I think those folks are going to get gobbled up pretty hard. So this was on TechCrunch. So for those that want to read a little bit more about the Deel is it's just go to TechCrunch.com, type in Deel, and you'll find all their funding news. But what it really got me to think about, outside of the obvious, is the title. Deel, comma, the $12 billion HR startup acquires Zavvi to step up consolidation play. Now, of course, I play a lot around in the startup space, and so do you. So Deel's been around for 5 years. It has 25,000 customers. Yeah. It's valued at $12 billion. At what point do we stop calling them a startup?
They're not a startup. Yeah. When I saw that, they're just turning 5 years old. They like literally, they're like,
and no hate.
Five.
No hate. I mean, that's the only word that's the only word I would change in the title.
Yeah.
I'd be comfortable debating
that we're more of a startup than they are.
Well, they're one of their rounds of funding was like $600 million.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. Seriously. You're not a startup anymore.
Not with 25,000 people. No.
No. And they're doing great work. So absolutely, first of all, great company doing great work. Well, let's get on. We got a bunch of acquisitions. So let's get on to our next one. Workday acquires HiredScore. And it will. The acquisition will combine industry-leading responsible AI solutions to elevate the talent acquisition experience to companies around the world. All right. So we know HiredScore really well.
Yeah.
And what I like about this play, this is on PR Newswire, so you can go look it up for yourself and kind of read their take on it as well. But it's Workday's recognition that in their recruiting product, they need to have more AI and to make the experience better. And you know what? I like that. First of all, I like the recognition from Workday to then say, okay, you know what we need? They're doing a great job in this. Yeah. Athena is a wonderful leader. She knows a lot about AI. This is actually a really, really good ad. I think it's a great team over there. It's a great team. I think it's a great ad. I think first of all, for both parties. And ultimately, Workday, so let's say they're sitting on 5,000 HCM clients and I have Workday recruiting tool. It's perfect. It makes everybody's life better. So good for them.
I think a couple of things that I took from this that I thought was congratulations, first off, to HiredScore, right? 100%. Love their logo. Love everything about them, right? They're a great group of – what's that?
I got socks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't have socks. Nobody ever gives me socks, but you take socks.
I do take socks.
So side note here, this is where we get taken off track.
Dude, no. It's for my son. Van Aulis is a sock connoisseur.
Yeah.
When I go to a conference.
So if you stand up right now, you don't have the HiredScore socks.
Oh, no. I'm wearing just white. I'm wearing just white socks.
You have been known.
I have.
You have been known to drag me with you.
Walk
up and down every aisle of every event.
It's for my son. These are the things you do for children. Van Aulis.
My kids are watching. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten you many I've gotten some pairs of socks.
But we were at Sherm last year, and that was in June. I was going to a National Jamboree in July. I was there looking for – I was shopping.
I was looking there for very specific
– I was looking for compasses and Purell. It's very specific.
You had to get your merit badge. Holy crap. So anyway,
socks. Gotta have socks.
So the first one, a couple of things came to mind. One is awesome for HiredScore. Love what they're doing. I love the product. That last time I saw what they're doing, not too long ago in the fall, loved it.
Yeah.
But Workday, I thought to myself exactly what you said. Okay, they realized that their recruiting product was getting bad or subpar, very bad reviews.
They just wanted to make it better.
And they wanted to make it better. And I think that is very hard for an industry giant to do. Easy for them to write a check.
Right.
Hard for them to make a decision like that, to clearly make a statement and say, okay, we need to be better.
Right.
And kudos to them for doing that. I think that 100%. Was a good move.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's go on to the next one. What do you got?
All right, so First Advantage, another acquisition. First Advantage, man, what a big one, right?
It's huge. This is different from the two that we just previously discussed, where they're kind of doing additive, infusion, right?
Yep.
This is take out your competitor.
Yeah, this was the last couple of years they've declined, both of them. Both of them have declined in revenues. The immediate hit obviously is they reported there'll be a $50 million cut off the top through consolidation. Fantastic. But Sterling Sterling kills it. Their clients absolutely adore them. I don't know about First Advantage. I know they're the big one. Actually, not too much bigger than Sterling was. But I agree. I think this is what we're seeing here. They're taking a competitor off the shelf. Yeah. They're erasing the losses, and they're opening up each side is opening up their client base, of course, because they play in the same space, but they also play in slightly different spaces.
Right.
And so I think that's a good deal.
So it's $2 billion.
$2 billion.
$2.2 billion in cash. What was that, Chuck Woolery?
Be back in stocks.
Be back in two and two. So two. That's the cash in stocks. So my analysis of it is, Wall Street will love it. Clients will hate it. Culturally, we've worked with both. I don't think you could find two more opposite firms in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're dangerously close to monopoly status, that threshold.
They are. So they are.
I'm kind of looking at the SEC to look at this. I mean, you know, I don't know how close they are to that threshold, but it just seems to me, based on both their customers.
Well, I was reading and listening to a podcast that was talking about this, and it was one of the writers over at the Fool. And so I went and I read their article on it.
Right.
And they had a couple of different articles on it, which was interesting. I guess an acquisition this size brings a lot of the analysis out.
Yeah, you have to.
But they were very clear. This isn't a buy for them. This isn't a buy for them if you're buying stock. If you're buying stock, right? Yeah.
They wanted to settle. They wanted to settle.
This is one. Yeah, this is one. It's up 25% or something like that now, whatever it was. But wait until it gets to that point.
Right.
Because it is now I have no background in giving to give information. This is just what I read. But what they're saying is there's potentially going to be issues here.
Yeah.
And for them, it was a hold, which was interesting. Yeah, which is interesting.
Okay. All right. Last acquisition that I have is Business Solver announces acquisition of Capstone Group for tech and services consolidation. So this one makes perfect sense. All of them actually make perfect sense. Both of them, both firms, Capstone and Business Solver, serve the exact same customer. So the same market. Same buyer. They sell different things to that buyer, so there's not as much product overlap. And I think in the first year, it'll be like Ultimate Software, and Kronos, where they just sell to each other's customers. So, Capstone Group will bring Business Solver into their customer base and vice versa. And then they'll start building stuff together. I think I think the folks that follow the benefits, tech space.
Yeah.
I think they would say the same thing. Makes sense.
Yeah, and this is my confession story here. I've always made fun of or jokes about, like, oh, we don't cover the boring stuff. We don't do benefits and HR. And I got to tell you, the last year or so that I've 2 years or so that I've been like, okay, let's look at benefits. Let's look at all of this stuff, right? Since the
compliance.
It's a really interesting space, and I can see why people waste their time here, right? It's a little different than recruiting.
Well, you shouldn't say waste.
Wait, waste. You know what I mean? I mean, right? Sorry.
Don't bury the lead. Don't bury the lead.
No. Yeah, but it's a real – this space has a lot of innovation, and I think we're seeing that now with a lot of these – with the learning companies, especially with AI being – baked into the learning and the coaching programs and all these things we used to make fun of.
All of those things that you would think are just kind of the plumbing, like the infrastructural stuff to a house. So we kind of look past them because we're looking at the sexy stuff, like the paint.
Turns
the
out they're important.
The well, and AI has given them a brand new life.
They have, The coaching platforms, the learning platforms, all of that. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So I've got one here.
Okay.
This is – I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
I'll give you like 15 seconds.
Okay.
And I'm going to cut you off to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you thrive in the skills economy?
I don't.
All right. Well, that – now I got to wait 13 seconds.
No. I don't.
Are you saying you have no skills?
No, I think skills are for me and what I do and at the place I'm in my life, I think skills are things that you do in seconds and minutes. And so it's like throwing yourselves, like just this show is a great example of skills of finding fun stories that we like.
Yeah.
And then having conversations about what we like about the story or what we want the audience to kind of get out of the story. I can't say that I had that skill prior to us doing it. I might have, I might have been able, I mean, my nickname in high school was Mr. Bullshit. So like, okay, fair enough. I could probably bullshit my way through it. Fair. All right. Is what it is. However, you know, finding things that are really interesting and then do it going back and forth and pitching a story. I think, again, skills are not these boxes that you build. I think it's these micro things that you just develop and they also expire. And so as you're building new things, you're also things that they erode and decay.
I let you talk more than 15 seconds.
Yeah,
I gotta cut you off. So, all right. So this story, is about degrees versus no degree. Okay.
Right.
So companies dropping the need to have a degree,
right,
for the job.
Right.
Okay. So this has been happening for the last couple of years. Well, for a long time, but the last couple of years, it's really kind of gotten big. And some companies have gotten out there and they've, you know, King Kong beat their chest. Sorry about that. Bad English. Sorry for the editors out there. Only if Grammarly was audio, I'd be perfect. Oh,
dude, I'm already working on it. Don't worry.
Perfect. So out of the hundreds of companies and probably thousands that have said, you don't need a degree anymore. We're opening our jobs, right?
All right.
Listen to this. Approximately 65% of the companies that have stated they're dropping their degree requirements have hired at least the same number of college graduates or more, most of them more, into the positions that they've actually removed the requirement for the degree from.
Right.
Kind of makes sense to me. I could see, right? They said it. They did nothing to actually implement it, right?
Right.
And to manage that process. But what I found important about this, and I think this gets fixed quickly moving forward. Quickly meaning over the next, you know, set of years. I think this gets fixed.
Where'd you get the report?
This was from, I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
There's two of them out there. Okay, so Hiring Lab, indeed. Hiring Lab put one out just this week, and it's, again, to your point, it's educational requirements are gradually disappearing from job posting. Fewer than 1 in 5, 17.8% U.S. job posting on Indeed require a 4-year degree. Which my analysis of that is real simple. Yeah. Why are degree requirements on any job posting?
Right. It was from HBR and Burning Glass.
Okay, so that can be found. So that for the audience.
Yeah,
that
can be found
I'm gonna drop it in right now. BurningGlassInstitute.org.
Well,
so if you go there, it's actually it's a form. I mean, it's free. There's no form.
Right.
So you could just go. But what that report. Again, my analysis on that report was the promise of skills-based hiring versus the reality of skills-based hiring.
Right.
So here we're going to do this. We're going to drop the degrees. We're going to go for skills. We're going to a lot of energy, a lot of positive energy around that. But the reality of that in this report is they're not really at that place where they're doing that.
No, they're not doing it. But what I found interesting here was that non-degree holders, and this is why this is real. This is actually really important, I think, as we move forward. Non-degree holders see about a 25% increase in salary by taking on a job that once required a degree that no longer requires a degree.
However,
non-degrees employees are, and so here's the other thing to that. They're also more 10% more likely to stay with the company for at least 24 months.
That's loyalty.
Oh, because of that increase, right? They're building that loyalty. That's a 20% increase in retention. That is not hard to calculate back into the benefits of the company.
That's right. Now you're dealing with cost of hiring, training, the opportunity cost of that person being gone.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense
everything,
to me.
Everything. Right. That's a massive increase.
Let's go on to the next thing. So I ran across this on Gallup. And so this is just kind of really interesting. It's exploring kind of Americans' satisfaction in their personal lives against satisfaction with America. Really interesting. And they broke it down by political party affiliation. And so one of the stats that rang out to me, Republicans are mostly satisfied personally, dissatisfied nationally. 75%. Oh. So, like this is, I mean, first of all, just go to Gallup.com, type in employees exploring their satisfaction. I like poll and research like this, and I like you're looking at satisfaction as your personal satisfaction and your national satisfaction, and you're doing down the party line. And again, we're in an election year, so it's really interesting to see people's the optics around how they view and how they view their own satisfaction. So I thought it was cool.
All right, let's see here. I got one more I want to pick out for you.
I got one too. Go ahead.
You go. Okay. So you'll know more about this than me. But I wanted to bring it up. So ADP recently did their took their incubator and went public, right? With it.
It's labs.
Curious to get your thoughts on that. And so we see a lot of companies that do this. They have an investment arm, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
What are you some of the companies that we've worked with over the years are part of this, right? And I'm curious to get your thoughts on what this means as they are now looking to invest more in this space here.
Well, I think it's genius. ADP's largest payroll company in the world.
Yeah.
And so they need to innovate, right, to stay relevant in all the things that they do, because they're not just one thing. They have all kinds of products all across the strata. So they've got to innovate. They can't innovate themselves all the time. So they've got to outsource innovation to startups. Right. And that's not a hickey on them. Every company does.
Yeah.
I mean, we just talked about Workday and Deel acquiring. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
That's why they do it.
I love the labs. I love the idea of a large company putting funding together, putting an accelerator incubator together, and putting things together to basically say, you know, here's two gals that want to solve this problem, and we're not going to do it.
Right.
And they're going to go do it. Let them go do it, get some traction, and let's turn them on to our clients. I love it.
Yeah.
100%. All right. So ran across this, the ultimate guide to applicant screening plus screening question examples.
Anytime you say ultimate guide.
I know. This is brought to us by the Academy to Innovate HR. AIHR.com. So it's a pretty good domain, quite frankly, but it's a training company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as much about like pure research, but their content, what I like about their great content, it's free. So right. You can go and get their content like that article, the ultimate guide bill, it gives tricks and hints and things for candidates, for hiring managers, for recruiters. It just walks people all the way through. Here's how you should screen. And for people that struggle, both in HR and in recruiting, they struggle to like think about how should we be screening. Again, it's I don't know if I'd use the ultimate guide, but it's good content that kind of gives you a starting place for what you should or what you can do. So anyhow, take a look at it and especially their blog. But if you like courses, they also have, because it's a training company, they also have courses. So if you're looking for that, you got that too.
And their site, not that it matters, but their site is very easy to navigate.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Good domain.
Yeah.
You got all what right, do you, what you got? You, are you into funding now?
I'm good. I know you got more.
I got oh, just got? Two. You had the Glean thing.
Oh, Glean. Yeah, we could talk about Glean. So Glean, they picked up $200 million. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
Another $2.2 billion valuation, right? So tell me, what do you think about this one?
So I think it's just to file this in the folder of enterprise workplace AI copilots.
Yeah,
and just think of this. We're going to see a flood of these things in learning, and everywhere in the employee experience, where there's something that helps managers, that helps leaders, board members, candidates,
right?
Everybody, they're going to have something that's along with them, a Siri or Alexa or whatever you want a bit that helps them along the way. So I like it.
I just see this category just. I mean, it's a volcano. It's going to explode. I mean, it has exploded. It's going to continue.
$200 million.
Mm. Yeah, and it's probably one of the not just in work, just in life. Like,
yeah, agreed.
I want more of it. Like, I love all of this stuff. Like, I want more of it in my life. I want to be watched.
You just want to get more HEO. Get more out of life.
I should probably not say it that way. I like to be watched. Man, I don't mind Big Brother listening in, right? Like, I want my life personalized.
Mark that.
Yeah. I want Big Brother to watch. I like my life personalized. And so just as I didn't mind, or just as I used to, I still do, you know, you search some stuff online just to get the ads, right? Yeah. I sign up for stuff and put stuff in my cart purposely just so I get deals, right? There's a lot of this out there today. That can be obviously in work, but just in life, like just everything. I want it personalized.
Yeah, I think for the audience, as you think of this stuff, think of it as the employee experience EX meets productivity.
Right.
So, and that's for everybody. So this isn't just focused on employees or just focused on, it's literally where we're going to see this proliferate all facets of the organization.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, last thing I got, not necessarily work related, but definitely
kind of threw me off.
It did throw you off. Israeli Defense Force alums, ex-DIGO, that's EXODIGO, closes $105 million to generate 3D underground maps using AI. So. You can kind of pick apart the obvious part of this, right? Like they're in a war, and a lot of the war is being fought underground. Okay, yeah. So like this tracks pretty simply, but you know, if you think about it, like what's the use outside of the obvious? It's you know, like think of the southern border for the United States. There's tons of tunnels that do drug and sex trafficking. And like this tech could be used elsewhere for good, for a lot of good. And so, you know, you look, if you want to make it a work thing, somebody had to work and build those tunnels. So if you want
now
to make
that
it work,
tied it all in for us,
if you want to make it work related, great. I can make it work related. However, I just think it's fascinating that the application can be used for so much more. Like think about like New York. City Manhattan, it's been built on top of each for 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
So now think of what it can do, and go back and like how it can help archaeology find things of the past, subways that were built 150 years ago or whatever the bit is.
Yeah.
Find grave sites. Like think of like what it can do, not just in the obvious. Got it? They're going to try and find where you know Hamas is. Built an underground network of whatever.
I see
Got
how
it.
You're connecting this now.
But dude, it can be
it
used
puts,
everywhere.
It puts people to work.
Now, the tunnel builders, okay, maybe not so much. However, this can actually have a really large impact on the other aspects of life, like history and archaeology. All right, so the term – go ahead, finish
it. For those that don't know, this is what you think about 23 hours of every day.
Oh, 100%.
So this 100%. is we have to give you at least one of these every
week. Oh, yeah. The last time we talked about the wearable technology that helps women with PMS.
Yes.
Yes. Dude, we got to give you one of
these.
But
that could be actually tied to work as a benefit given, and there's a whole 100%. Bunch there.
So wait a minute. That was found at techfundingnews.com. Take a look at that. That's super easy to find. But I wanted to throw out a term that I saw in three different articles. Three different articles this week had FOBO.
FOBO.
I'm not really into the FOBO.
I'm going to iron that on that is beautiful FOBO. Shirt here. FOBO.
What's up, FOBO? Like FUBU, like I get. But FOBO, don't really understand it. It's fear of being obsolete. And it's real. I mean,
absolutely,
and so
real.
In 1 week to run across it three different times in three different outlets. So it's a thing. And I think people really feel that way and can feel that way when we're talking more about robots and AI and things like that. So I don't want anyone to fear being obsolete. I think it just changes the way that you look at technology, the way you interact with it, and maybe your skills and things like that. But again, seeing it in three different articles, three different places, made me think, okay, one time it's a bit, no one cares. Two times, okay, that's not really that big a deal. Three times, nope, that's legit. That's
a thing.
I'm pretty
sure there's a shirt out there somewhere. If not, I'm going to make one because I don't want it. So, all right. That's the barf for the week. Subscribe. Love us everywhere. Connect with us. If you see us at events, say hello. Stop by if we're podcasting somewhere, and we'll talk to you soon.